it that just by calling somebody a Jew, it sounds racist? Why is that? It's not racist at all. That guy's a Jew.
How could you say that about him?
That's ridiculous. I don't buy into any of that. But I do have a solution for it if it bothers you. I think about these things all day long. You have no idea what it's like to be me. It's a trial. Hi, everybody. This is Martin Zender. So I make a motion in the general vicinity of calling Jews Israelites. Why don't we just say an Israelite? Because that does away with that stigma. A Jewish person, that's better than a Jew. It just sounds, I guess at first it was a shortened term of Judah, and maybe it actually was derogatory at first to call somebody a Jew. It was a shortened form. So I guess that I'm going to start this. I'm going to start calling them Israelites, and you know my love for God's chosen ones. We don't even know where the true ones are. I'm not even about to believe that those people over there now in the Middle East are pure Israelites. But I love everybody. I do love everybody. That much is for sure. So I left off. I told you yesterday I was going to talk about Jacob blessing the sons of Joseph. And I then went on a rant and a rampage about the foolishness of God being wiser than humans, which I think was a worthy rant and a worthy rampage, at least judging from the mail I'm getting on that. So let's go to verse 21 of Hebrews 11. By faith, Jacob... Oh, I gotta tell you, do you think... My son Gabe thought this was terrible, but we were vacationing in Gettysburg years ago, and speaking of racism, I don't think this was racist at all, but we talked about we wanted to go to an authentic Mexican restaurant, because Mexican food's great. So we're in the parking lot, and this Mexican guy started walking toward us. How is that racist? He was Mexican. And I rolled down the window. I said, excuse me, sir. And my son, Gabe, just like crawled under the seat because he knew that I was about to ask, get this, are you ready for this? I was about to ask a Mexican guy where a Mexican restaurant was. It seemed like the most logical thing in the world to do. Gabe thought I was stereotyping him. Well, Mexican people like Mexican food. They're experts at it. Who would know more about Mexican food than a Mexican? So I said, excuse me, sir, can we find a, genuine Mexican restaurant in this town? And he didn't get mad at me. He told me where it was. And he says, I notice you have two sons. Oh, I have three, but one of them's under the seat. And so we went to the Mexican restaurant and everything was fine. So write me and let me know if you think that was racist of me to ask a Mexican where an authentic Mexican restaurant was. Okay, on to the scriptures. I wanted corroboration. I've wanted my point backed up. But if you can disagree with me, that's fine. I'll accept it. I really will take my medicine if I got it coming. Now, Jacob, when dying, blesses each of his sons. He did this by faith. And this is, I told you I struggled a little bit. By faith, when dying, blesses each of his sons, each of the sons of Joseph, his son, and worships leaning on the top of his staff. And see, Joseph put the eldest one, Manasseh, at Jacob's right hand because you bless the oldest. The eldest is blessed. This is the way of God. But, and because Joseph thought that that was the right thing to do. And yes, technically it was the right thing to do. And he put then Ephraim at Jacob's left hand. Well, Jacob, being the trickster that he was, remember his former name meant supplanter. He was a trickster. He crossed his hands. He crossed his hands, and he blessed the youngest. So his right hand, that's the hand that counts. That's the magic hand. You pass that, he crossed it over, put it on the head of Ephraim. And Joseph said, no, you just made a mistake there. Your hand's on Ephraim. What you wanted is on Manasseh. And Jacob said, I know what I'm doing. Shut up, kid. And so remember, he's the one who tricked his father, got the birthright. He was the youngest, and his brother Esau was the oldest. And all this occurred by faith. because they're trusting that God's going to take care of it down the road. Now, verse 22, I know, that's kind of weak. I wouldn't have added that if I had written Hebrews. I would have left that out. It seems a little weak. I'm with it with these other guys. Noah, absolutely. Enoch, yes. Abraham, Sarah, obviously. But these guys blessing people. I don't know, I'm not on board, but okay, they're in here. So now this I don't get either. Verse 22, by faith, Joseph, at his decease, remembers concerning the exodus of the sons of Israel and gives directions concerning his bones. Now, I hope to become quite a man of stature so that I may give directions as to my bones. I guess it says here concerning his bones. I mean, I will make this pronouncement. If I become a man of stature, I will say, I will gather my family and say, I am now going to give directions concerning my bones. That's how you have to say it. Concerning my bones. Now that's a man of faith. Assume, because you trusting the people are going to do the right things with your bones. You better not mess with my bones. That's what Joseph was saying, but he didn't know. You know, you mess with my bones. We're going to send up people after you. You mess with the patriarch's bones, you in big trouble. Now, okay, we're done with that. I'm glad of it, actually. Now, in verse 23, by faith, Moses, here's another heavy hitter. This guy's trading cards are worth a lot of money today. By faith, Moses, being born, was hid 3 months. This wasn't the faith of Moses. This was the faith of his parents. Was hid 3 months by his fathers. Now, why did he leave his mother? Yochebed. Yeah, they're leaving Yochebed out of here. Moses' mother, saying his fathers. Well, I guess fathers was a term for your forebears, which would be Yochebed, his mother, and Amram, his father. So Amram, the grandson of Levi. So his parents, now this is the really curious part. Because they perceived that the little boy was handsome, and they were not afraid of the mandate of the king. Back then, the king, Pharaoh, had ordered that all the baby boys in Egypt, the Israelites, the Hebrew boys, that they all be killed. That's terrible, because he was tired of Israelites. There were too many of them, so we have to stop this proliferation of Israelites, of Hebrews, so we're going to kill the babies. That's lowbrow. That is lowbrow. And that Pharaoh is going to answer for that at the Great White Throne. You bet he is. And I think he's going to be cast into the lake of fire, which is the second death, and will not be made immortal until the consummation. That's my guess of this bastard who ordered this. But anyway, thank God that the baby was cute, because apparently that's the only reason they were not afraid of the mandate of the king, and they hid him for 3 months. Well, should we hide him or not? He's our son. What should we do? Well, you think he's good looking enough to hide, or do you think we should just go ahead and let him kill him? So they looked at him, Yochebed and Amram did, and they thought, yeah, he's handsome, so we're going to hide him. We got to preserve looks like this. They could, you know, maybe they were thinking of a modeling deal. I don't know. But it turned out that it really helped Moses to become a bigwig in Egypt, because if he hadn't been a cute baby, I'm getting ahead of the story here, then Pharaoh's daughter probably wouldn't have plucked him out of the basket. But these people were clever, these Hebrews. You know, you can call them Hebrews too. You just can't say, these Jews were clever. Yeah, that's terrible. You can't say that. I don't know why. These Hebrews were clever because they put him in a little basket. They pitched it. I mean, they put pitch on it, tar, just like Noah did with the ark, sent it down the river. And then Miriam, Moses' older sister, I think she was 4 years older than him, she follows it down. They pushed it toward where the princess was bathing, the daughter of Pharaoh, and Miriam followed up so that when the princess heard the baby crying in a little basket, she took it and goes, oh, what a cute little baby. That's the Egyptian accent. I studied this. I went on YouTube, found Egyptian accents. Oh, what a cute little baby. That is exactly how it sounds. So don't even check up on me. Just believe me. That's the way it is. And thank God the baby was cute. So by faith, obviously, the faith of these parents is astounding. Anything could happen between there and, you know, drifting downstream to where hopefully Pharaoh's daughter will think you're cute enough to rescue you. And then what are the chances then of Miriam coming up and say, oh, I'll be happy to provide a nurse for the baby, because you're busy, obviously, daughter of Pharaoh. And so she says, yes, I would like to keep this son, A, and B, you can nurse the baby. And so she takes the baby back home to Jochebed, who nurses him and the regular visits. It's a real great situation. All that happens by faith, by faith, by faith. And so we cast our basket into the river, really. You put your hopes, that's the whole point here in these last several verses. You're setting your hopes and dreams adrift on the river of God. But look at this. It's not a meandering river. It goes exactly where God wants it to go. Yes, you do set it intelligently. They put it, I guess it was the Nile River. They didn't put it on the Mississippi River. That would have been stupid, because then, you know, Elvis or Mark Twain or somebody would have picked up the baby and things would not have worked out. So you do want to cast intelligently, but nevertheless, this was still an act of faith. You can't cover all your bases. That's where you have to rest. That's where I know there are control freaks out there. I know I'm talking to some OCD controlling people. Have to have everything right. Have to make sure everything's right. There comes a time where you do what you can do. What's that famous verse? Help me recognize the things I can change. Give me the wisdom to accept the things I can't change. I'm paraphrasing it. To set your plans. Set your dreams in the basket. Put pitch around it. In other words, to me, that means take care of it as much as you can. Assure that at least it's not going to get, you know, it's not going to leak. That's a good idea. And now send it in the general direction. And that's all you can do. That's all you can do. The details, the currents, the speed of the current, where that thing lands is up to God. That's why Paul says in Philippians 4 to make your requests known to God. And then the peace of God will be garrisoning your hearts. The peace of God that's superior to every frame of mind will be garrisoning your hearts. We're talking the peace of God here. We're talking about a faith. Faith and peace, to me, go hand in hand. Without faith, and the faith is trusting that God's going to do the best for you. All things work together for the good of those who are loving God, called according to His purpose, Romans 8. So set your plans adrift. Pitch that sucker. Pitch your plan. Cover it with heavy tar. Make sure it's waterproof, and then send it off. God's going to take care of it. And you might even meet a beautiful woman at the edge of the river.